Hello, and welcome to Nintendo World Report Connectivity, episode 364. I'm your host, Neil Ronahan, joined pretty much almost always by John Raritan.
Howdy, everybody.
So, to celebrate the 364th episode, we are going to talk about third-party games on the Nintendo 64.
A thing nobody ever talks about.
Yeah, I feel like we're always talking about your Donkey Kong 64s and your Perfect Darks and your Marios and your Zeldas. But who's out there talking about Winback? Us. That's who. But before we get to that, we're going to do some listener mail, following up on some of our movie chats from last episode, talking about the Tetris and Mario movies that came out in the past couple weeks. First one is from Chariot Goblin, who says, "Hey, Connectivity, the Super Mario Brothers movie is awesome. Bowser's random singing is stuck in my head. It made everyone in the theater laugh. How would you compare this Bowser song to the Iggy and Spike song from the extended cut of the 1993 Mario movie? Thanks. Keep up the good work."
Now, do we need to provide... We did talk about the extended cut of the Mario movie.
I think it was like 2 years ago.
Episodes ago, yeah.
Yeah.
But I guess for some context, there is a deleted scene from the 1993 version of Mario, in which, while Mario and Luigi are at the Boom Boom Bar getting the rock from Big Bertha, names that I remembered off the top of my head.
It's very memorable.
It won't leave. It's stuck in there forever. It's like a curse. But Iggy and Spike are at the bar and are generally talking about their dissatisfaction with Koopa's rule, which gradually evolves into a, dare I say, Hamilton-esque rap sequence.
It is, because like at first, like I before that, I had seen it back when like lost cut got unearthed and posted.
Yeah.
And watching it again now is like, when does this, oh, the song already started?
It just happens. It's so well done.
It is very much what exists now is a rough cut. So it doesn't have the nice, you know, the effects that Mr. Jack Black gets to use
right
in the actually well-made Mario movie.
There's really no like accompaniment outside of a general rhythm that can be heard in the background of the bar. Yeah.
I think, and I was saying this before the show, I think what works for me best about Bowser's Peaches song is the surprise of it in the movie. Like, I have not seen the movie again. I wonder how well it will play, because like legit, when he started singing and playing the piano, I burst out laughing to the point that my 4-year-old who was sitting next to me was like, "Daddy, it's not that funny." I'm like, "Yes, it is." But like, it was a surprise. Like, I went into that movie not expecting the Bowser's goal to be marrying Princess Peach. Did it seem like a possibility? Sure, but I love the way they played that off in the movie. After, you know, watching the multiple music videos that exist for this song now.
Multiple official music videos.
Yes. It's funny. I don't think it's that funny. To that end, I got to give the nod to Iggy and Spike in the 93 Mario Brothers movie deleted scene, in that I think theirs goes for it in a bigger way than Peach's does in the 2023 Mario movie.
Yeah, it's bizarrely well executed.
Yeah.
And I would love to know, I would love for someone to go in and actually like perform the accompaniment for it. Like remaster that scene.
You know who should do that? Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Perfect.
Just do it. It's instead of Hamilton, it's Miyamoto.
I would watch the shit. I'd probably like it more than Hamilton, to be honest.
Oh my god, you need Jonathan Groff to play Yamashi. Or I guess I don't know. Like, who would be his villain?
Like, who's the villain in Lin-Manuel Miranda's Miyamoto?
I mean, who,
I don't
the
know.
Aaron Burr. Like, no, it can't be Tezuka. The Aaron Burr has to be Yuji Naka.
Yeah.
There's no duel. Yuji Naka just goes to jail.
They could be like getting ready for a duel, and then Yuji Naka just gets arrested. Oh man, I want that so bad now. Luckily, I know that old Lin-Manuel Miranda does listen to our show. So just,
I mean,
work on that.
He's listened to other video game, former video game journalists. He's a big McElroy fan. Who knows? Maybe he just hopped over here at some point.
Yeah.
Lin, have your people call my people and we'll work on.
I think Miyamoto, I'm your people. Musical. So just call me.
I mean Peaches is fun.
Peaches is great.
I just look ahead to the next year of like, oh, this might get kind of a little annoying. Because it's good. It's fun, it's a funny joke. I feel like it's probably gonna get played out very quickly.
Oh yeah. Now, best case scenario, the sequel to the Mario movie has Iggy and Spike in it, and they just resurrect this song.
Yeah. No, like that. I like, honestly, the fact that they brought like the Super Mario Brothers rap makes me hopeful that after they had this success, maybe they will poke more fun at the 93 movie, which I feel like it's also worth pointing out. This movie's kind of just the 1993 movie, but like sanitized.
Yeah, we talked, and we won't get too far into spoilers here, but like we did mention that a little bit last week, that it does have
weird similarities.
There's a lot of parallels.
Yeah.
Like, I guess don't fix what isn't broken.
Yeah.
There were a few sections that weren't broken, so they didn't fix it.
Yep. But yeah, I mean, since we last recorded, the Mario movie made all of the money.
Yeah, I guess we could talk. We could bring that up. Yeah.
Way more. I think, what is it? Almost $400 million worldwide after a 5-day opening. I forget if it's the largest 5-day opening for like movies opening on Wednesday. It is definitely the largest domestic opening for a movie opening on Wednesday.
I know it's, did it wind up getting like largest animated
opening? Yeah. I believe it got that.
Okay, I know it was like looking like it might.
Like, I think Endgame still, I mean, Endgame opened on a Friday. I'm like 99% sure. I mean, if it opened on a Wednesday, Mario wouldn't have beaten it. Like, I think something like Endgame, and there's probably a couple other movies like that too, like have a bigger 5-day gross. It's just that they opened on a Friday. But Mario opened on a Wednesday, which wouldn't be shocked if it got moved up to a Wednesday because they're like, we have a shot at beating these records. And sure, it's definitely a feather in your cap to be like, oh, biggest animated opening, biggest 5-day domestic opening, stuff like that. Always good to position yourself to be the get the number one records.
I feel like this did better than anyone, including like Illumination or Nintendo, expected it to do.
Yeah, I think they expected it to do very well, not this well.
Yes, like these are just hilarious. Like, it's funny to look back now at the discussion of like, will this beat Sonic the Hedgehog?
Yeah, it beat Sonic the Hedgehog in like 4 days.
Yeah, well, and I'm pretty sure it's already beat Sonic's like entire theatrical run.
Yeah,
like it's destroyed.
I mean, we're probably what, a week away from it beating both movies combined.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's doing just stupid well.
I think it is worth, like, Sonic 2 was still a big success, and Sonic 2 was early 2022, which is still when I think movies were still pretty impacted by the pandemic. To give Sonic a little credit there, I'm very curious to see how a Sonic the Hedgehog 3 will perform in Christmas 2024, because I think that'll be more representative of, like, Sonic at its full power competing with what the Mario movie did now.
Super Sonic, if you will.
Yes.
I wonder if Mario's success will have any ripple effects on future Sonic movies. Like if there'll be a general boom to like video game movies. I wonder if we'll get a bunch of just like garbage animated video game movies because of Mario, like companies going out and licensing whatever, you know, Bomberman, to make whatever crap they can, which I'm excited for.
Yes. Yes, I think that will happen. And it's probably going to be very bad.
I'm so excited. I'm trying to think
Remember when there was going to be like, what was it? The Dark Universe. And there was like that photo shoot and one movie was made.
Yeah, one movie and like a pretty decent video game.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm just throwing this out here to any Hollywood big shots that are listening. I hear the Buck Bumble movie rights dirt cheap. That's just waiting for you.
All right, let's go to the next question from Adolf Vega. I agree with everything y'all said about both the Tetris and Mario movies. It upsets me that some reviewers are saying that the Mario movie is, quote, bad because it isn't deep. Look, I don't need every animated movie to destroy my psyche and cause me to rethink the universe and give me an existential crisis. Sometimes I just want to have a fun time and not cry like a baby when I see a cartoon. I know I'm crazy. Some ideas for the Nintendo 64 podcast. Just going to go. There's a whole list here. I'll give some snaps to Top Gear Rally. GoldenEye with proximity mines or golden guns and playing Star Wars Shadows of the Empire because it's fun trash that Adolf Vega remembers getting remembering getting super angry with Turok. But I do want to the question here. Did the N64 just blow your mind when you first played it because you were used to 2D games? The answer to that for me is yes. I probably have talked about it before. I have a memory of walking into a Best Buy probably in 1996, and that was when, I don't know if this was like a nationwide thing, but they had video games in like the center of the store, and for Mario 64 they had like it displayed on, I believe it wasn't even one giant TV, I think it was several TVs combined to form one TV or one screen, and Mario 64 playing on that. And I remember looking at that and just like being in awe, like jaw agape. And then I like played a Yoshi's Island demo while I waited for the Mario 64 kiosk to open. But like that is something that is so impactful for me. And like, yes, video games all look better than Mario 64 now. Well, maybe not all of them, but a lot of them do. But I don't think I'll have that kind of impact, even as I have been like HD games, looking at some of the, looking at stuff that outputs at 4K on a 4K TV looks very impressive. Even stuff like VR blowing my hair back with just some of the cool stuff you can do. Just that leap to 3D and how perfectly Nintendo executed it with Mario 64 and the Ocarina of Time. I don't think I'll have that feeling again.
Yeah, I definitely had that experience of realizing 3D was an option, but I think I had it on the Super Nintendo with Star Fox and eventually with like Doom and stuff like that. So the N64 was okay. Finally, there's more of this. It wasn't like a thing that I had never seen before. Maybe I hadn't seen it, at that level of fidelity and running that smoothly.
I do remember knowing Star Fox existed, before that time. I don't know if I had played it yet. I did play stuff like Doom, but like this was a different level of how Mario 64 was executed.
Yeah, well, that's, to highlight Mario 64 in particular, even compared to other N64 games, that game had a sense of momentum,
scale, and
in the way scale and like the way that Mario controlled in the world, it felt less robotic than a lot of other 3D games had. Like it. Just like Mario moved in a very natural way that like games still struggle to match. You throw Mario 64 up against Sonic Adventure and make them both run in a circle and you'll see exactly what I mean. Mario leans into his turns and they feel natural and he feels like he has weight, which is something that it's crazy that they just kind of nailed right out the gate.
It took a very long time. I forget exactly when development on Mario 64 started. 93 maybe
it was. It has its roots back on Super FX chip stuff. It's with stuff like that, they go through so much prototyping that like it's hard to say like when did Mario 64 begin life as Mario 64. I don't know. But prototypes for what would evolve into Mario 64 were in development around the same time as Star Fox 2.
This is unrelated to the N64, the N64 bit. I think it was, I want to say I heard this on the 8-4 Play podcast a number of years ago. I think it might have been for like the Super Nintendo's 25th anniversary, which that was a very long time ago. I think we are well past the 30th anniversary of the Super Nintendo. It was someone on the A4 Play podcast was talking about how part of the reason why some of those Super Nintendo games, like Super Mario World, Link to the Past, like seems so far ahead from the original Nintendo is that Nintendo spent so long working on the Super Nintendo because the success of the NES let them kind of just like take their time with it. That
yeah,
they essentially like Super Mario World and Link to the Past were sequels to games that never came out. And I feel like Super Mario 64, maybe not as demonstrably as I think like that's kind of how it was for Super Nintendo, because they were able to sit on that for a while because the NES kept selling. That N64, just by the nature of how long that development cycle was, you know, comparatively for the time now, like I think if you look at the actual development of the game itself, it's like probably like sub 2 years, which, you know, that would be very fast in today's environment. It was a completely different landscape, fueled by Miyamoto demanding it's Mario time. But like, I think Mario 64 went through so much iteration that there were basically versions of that game that we never saw that probably in a different world, we might have had Mario 32 instead of Mario 64 that came out before we saw a half step, but instead we saw that gigantic leap. And I think Nintendo, especially in the 90s, did a very good job at, you know, kind of waiting until like this thing is in a very good shape to be shown and showed off, and so you had these bigger leaps between projects.
It's interesting to think about that from like today's perspective, because I almost feel like, and maybe this was inadvertent, but it almost feels like that's kind of where they put themselves when they released the Switch. Like, not because the Wii U was doing well, but because they were kind of in a position where we can't have another thing do badly. We're going to sit on this thing and let it do poorly while we get the next thing to where it needs to be.
I would argue to an extent, I feel like Odyssey and Breath of the Wild feel a little bit like that as well. And I think some of that is, there's probably a world where Breath of the Wild and Odyssey are, you know, if the Wii U is doing better, maybe those games are pushed to market sooner instead of having that extra time to cook.
Well, we know, I mean, we don't, it's never been formally said, but it like pretty widely spoken of that Mario Odyssey was done for a while before it came out.
And I think, and I believe Odyssey has roots on Wii U.
I'd imagine. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It would have to. Like there probably is a Wii U build of maybe probably not the finished. It's like they made the entirety of Mario Odyssey for Wii U, but I'm sure there are earlier versions of it on Wii U.
Even, I wish I could pull this off the top of my head. Luigi's Mansion 3, E3 2019. Bryce Holiday, I think that's the guy from Next Level Games. It was a Canadian, because it was someone speaking in English, made a comment during a Treehouse Live there about how they worked on concepts of Luigi's Mansion 3 on Wii U.
Federation Force was also a Wii U game at one point.
Yeah, and I don't think we know 100% what the timeline was for Next Level, but I think after Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon, I think kind of just putting the pieces together, I think they might have started to work on a Luigi's Mansion 3 on Wii U and then were kicked over to Federation Force, because I think that might have been the time period where it was like, we should probably just 86 any shit we're doing for the system, because like we'll have Splatoon and Mario Maker. Those things kind of go hand in hand with this device, but anything else that can be saved for later, let's get it the fuck off of here.
Yeah, if I remember right, I believe Federation Force started as a Wii U game and then became both Wii U and 3DS before it was eventually just fully moved on to 3DS.
There is so many sliding doors through Nintendo in the past 10 years. I mean, really just the past 40 years, there's a lot of sliding doors with the company.
Yeah. I really want to see what the Wii U version of that game would have looked like. Would be so interesting.
Maybe. I mean, yeah, we might have to wait. I mean, we see what's coming out of old retro people now. maybe we just gotta give Next Level another decade.
Oh yeah, there's somebody who has an old build on a hard drive somewhere, and they were a contractor or something, and they left, forgot it was on the hard drive, and in 20 years they'll be like, oh, I guess I have this.
It is, I mean, it's probably, yeah, because that is also Next Level Games was not owned by Nintendo at this time. And I do believe, I think, wasn't it some of the people, like, I think a good number of the leadership at Next Level, I think, cashed out after they got bought out.
Makes sense.
Jordan, you're out in Vancouver. If you're listening, start to make friends with people who cashed out at Next Level. Make your inroads. Find their hard drives. Get data.
I know the guy that animated the final scene for Metroid Prime Federation Force was a contractor. He may have the Wii U version on a hard drive. Go find him.
This is your mission.
Yeah, he's the guy that confirmed that was indeed Silux.
Yeah,
he's like that's what the model was called.
I love stuff like that. Let's get to what the main event of this is, which I think we're going to go through five games each of Nintendo 64 third-party games, and we are going to do 64 questions, and by 64 I mean 6 plus 4, so 10 questions, 10 yes or no questions to figure out. Well, I guess, you know what, I feel like being loosey-goosey. No, it has to be yes or no. Let's do yes or no questions. So do you want to go first with asking questions, or do you want me to?
I'll ask questions first.
All right.
Mostly because I only have four games and I need to think of a fifth one.
All right.
I'm stoked.
Okay. Fire when ready.
Okay. Could this be considered? Do we say that these all have to be third party games?
Yes. I think I do have the one on my list.
You have one cheat.
Yeah, I have one that was published in Nintendo in North America and Europe that is going to stay there. And you can ask, was this published by Nintendo in North America or Europe, if you want to, and I will give you a yes or no answer.
We established before the show that does not help me. And I still would not know what it is. So instead, I will ask, could this be considered a sports game?
Yes.
Okay. Does it involve skateboarding?
Yes.
Okay. Let's see. How can I got? I mean, I guess I could just guess the three, but that feels like cheating. How can I narrow it down? I
purposefully had this one first because I was like, this is going to be the easiest one.
Can you create your own tracks in it, or skate parks in it?
99% no, you cannot.
Is it Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1?
Yes, it is. Okay. And I have this one because this was the only one that, at the time of release, I actually played on N64. When I put together my list, I didn't want to do something like, I'm trying to think of an example of a game. I didn't want to do like a game that I discovered 10 years later. I wanted to do a game that, like, as a kid, was a game that I experienced on Nintendo 64. For me, I did first play Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 on a friend's PlayStation 1. I did not own a PlayStation at the time. So I got it on Nintendo 64 and played the crap out of it, even though it is a very compromised version of that game. It does not have all the music. I think it's just a game that is better on PlayStation than N64. I do own copies of 2 and 3 on N64 because 3 has that fun distinction of being the last Nintendo 64 game ever released. And also the version of Tony Hawk 3 on Nintendo 64 is absolute garbage. Because it's basically it is a PlayStation 2 game being downgraded for Nintendo 64.
I'm amazed that it actually, I've looked up footage of that and I'm amazed it actually runs.
It was a holy grail for me going to conventions for a couple years, and I finally found a copy of it in the wild. Tony Hawk 2 I wound up playing on PlayStation 1, and Tony Hawk 3 I played on PS2 and GameCube. So this was the one that I played on N64.
I guess it's my turn to have you guess at a thing then.
Yes. Could this game be considered a third person shooter?
Yes. Yeah.
Is this game published by Ubisoft?
No.
Is this game available on Switch?
No.
Was this game released in the 1990s?
Yes. You've eliminated Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3.
Yeah. I mean, there's a handful of games that came out in 2000 and 2001.
Majora's Mask. Does that count as a third person shooter? Maybe when you're like the Deku scrub.
Yeah. Was this game made by people who would work on Grand Theft Auto?
Not by company name.
I mean, I feel like it's a way like did DMA Design make this game? No, is probably the better way.
Yeah. Yeah, the no company associated with Grand Theft Auto worked on this game.
Am I, what is that, four questions, I think?
I haven't been counting.
Okay, let's say four. I think it's four. Was this game developed in America?
Hang on.
Yeah, just so you know, I just straight up have the Wikipedia page for my next game up ready to go.
Okay, yeah, no, I had to get to the company's page. Yes, it was.
Crap. So it's technically a third person shooter developed in America, released in the 90s. Is this a Star Wars game?
No.
Oh, okay. So now I'm at, I think, six. I don't know, I'm bad at numbers.
I think late. So.
Yeah, it's a number seven. Is this game, is this game Body Harvest?
No.
I'm like, this is crap.
This is great. My horrible taste in video games is going to make me win this game.
Is this game a port of a PC game?
No. But I'll throw on the addendum that there was a PC release of it, but I believe it came out at the same time.
Is this game Hexen?
No.
Crap.
Is that nine?
I think nine.
Okay. Are we playing where you get to ask another question before you get a final guess? Like you get to ask the 10th question, sure, and then you get a guess. Yeah.
Oh man, I'm totally blanking on what this could be. And just so we're clear, there are some games by Rare that are listed as Rare being the publisher, but that's horseshit. They're Nintendo published games.
It is not a Rare.
Okay, okay.
It is not a Rare developed or published game.
Okay.
That doesn't count as a question.
Yeah. That is just setting ground rules because there are like, think like Perfect Dark is listed as like published by Rare. Like, is it?
I also need to throw an addendum on your release date question. It was released in the 90s in North America.
Oh,
that may narrow some things down.
Is this game Hybrid Heaven?
No.
Okay. All right. I'm out.
It is Army Men Sarge's Heroes.
Ah, damn it.
Yeah, I went to double check and saw that the North American release date is September 28th of 1999 on the N64.
I should have known it was going to be that damn Army Men game.
In Europe and on every other platform, it was very early 2000.
Yeah,
so I didn't realize it was technically a timed exclusive on N64 in North America. This was, so as a kid, I was very limited on like what kind of violent video games I could play. And Army Men was great because I could always convince my parents to buy the Army Men games because they weren't real people. So it was a great way of sneaking what was just a third person shooter war game into your wholesome Christian household. Thanks, Army Men. Also, I just like, and I don't know if this was, I guess I probably got this from this game, but I really love, like, aesthetically, games where you play as like a very small thing in a giant world.
I remember that there was a PC strategy game that was like Battle Bugs or something.
Yeah,
I remember just being, it was like a tactics game, but there were all like different types of bugs and you'd be like playing in kitchens and shit. It was so cool.
Yeah, that sort of that vibe. Of, yeah, like, you know, there is a kitchen level in Ahriman Sarge's Heroes where it's, you're up on the countertops and like you can jump down into the sink and hide behind soup cans and like that kind of stuff. I aesthetically, I find it really cool. But okay.
All right. Mine, my second one is ready to go.
Okay. Is this a sports game?
No.
Okay. I have no idea what it could be. I've that's my one.
I will say
my one tried and true Neil method.
Not to give you a hint. Pretty good question to ask for my list.
I know your taste. Was this game released before 1998
in Japan? In North America? Before 1998? No.
Yes. So not including 1998.
Yes. It was not released before 1998.
Okay.
But probably the way I hemmed and hawed on that might have given you some hints.
Okay. That's fine. That's helpful. Keep hemming and or hawing. Is this game third person?
Yes.
Is there more than one game in its series on the system?
Yes.
Okay. Is it a Zelda game?
No.
Okay. Well, it's not Army Men Sarge's Heroes 2, I'm going to assume. Oh, but is it? Is it played in a 3D perspective as opposed to like a 2D platformer with 3D graphics perspective?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Is it the first N64 Goemon game?
Yes. Yeah. Mystical Ninja, right, starring Goemon.
Yes.
Which is, I feel like it came up kind of, I think it was like a game,
we talked N64 about this
game we
somewhat
want to see on. Yeah.
Yeah. If we hadn't talked about it somewhat recently, there's no way that game would have ever been in my brain.
It's one of those games that I have not played in the past 20 years, but I have such fond memories of playing that. And I want to say I played it before I even played Ocarina of Time. And then I did like replay it a couple years later. It's just such a weird game that really does nail some of what made something like Ocarina of Time work. Like Ocarina of Time is the better game by far. But like that Goemon game just goes for it. And is very funny. There's mech battles. There's ridiculous villains. It was my entry point into the Goemon series. There wasn't really a lot of. I think it's 2 of 4 Goemon games released in North America. There's the Super Nintendo one. I believe there's a Game Boy release. This one, and then the N64 sequel, which, spoilers, it is not one of my later games. The second Goemon's Great Adventure on N64 is a more of just a straight 2D platformer. I played both games and enjoyed them, but I appreciate the fact that Mystical Ninja starring Goemon is like an open 3D game and does a lot of really cool stuff. All right, your turn.
Okay.
And now I'm looking at a Wikipedia list. I did not look at a Wikipedia list before.
I did that for yours. You can sort by release date. And the Japanese and American release dates are next to each other. Which might be cheating, but I don't care. Okay, I am prepared.
All right. Is this game, or was this game released in 1998?
yeah, actually. good shot in the dark.
I realized, like, because I was thinking about it when you asked if it was before 1998, I was like, oh my god, so many games came out in 1998.
Yeah.
And I guess in North America, would it be? Because I feel like we need to specify that for that.
You know what? It came out in 1998, period.
Okay. All right, let's go. Is this a Star Wars game?
No.
Was this game published by Acclaim?
No.
Is this game Buck Bumble?
Yes.
Okay.
I knew I couldn't do it as my first one, because I knew it would be the first thing you would go to. So I was like, okay, now he's tried it. Maybe I can get away with it for the second one.
Yeah, but Buck Bumble rules. Like,
I'm also just like sitting on the Wikipedia page for Buck Bumble. And I forgot that this game takes place in 2010.
I love it.
This was just one of those. This is the peak sort of a movie rental store video game, the type of game that you don't own as a kid, but you rent consistently.
I straight up just bought Bug Bumble. Like, I don't think I got it at launch, but it was a game where I was like, this looks dumb. And then I played the crap out of it. Had friends that we did the soccer game with, and a couple buddies where I played that a lot. This is a very good video game.
This is one of the few N64 games that I own, like, complete mint condition in box, which I believe I got for like $12. And I think it's gone up in value. It was a good investment, as it turns out. And I got the strategy guide at the same time. The place where I was working got it traded in altogether. But yeah, I will give a shot to this game. It invented what would become Rocket League. It's the first game I can find where you're a small thing hitting a giant soccer ball.
I'm ready for my third game whenever you want to go.
Okay. Total 64 gave Buck Bumble a 9 out of 10.
Good for them.
That's okay. Okay. Back to my list of N64 games. Let's do the random shot in the dark year. Did this game come out in 1997?
Shit. Yes.
Did it? All right. Boy, we are doing great with that.
In every territory.
Sweet. Okay. Boy, that's the opener.
Yeah. Stake your claim.
Is it Mischief Makers?
Yes.
Holy shit.
This is the game that was it was Treasure Made. Enix published it in Japan, and then Nintendo published it in North America and Europe.
Oh, this is that one. Okay. Yeah, I would not have remembered that Nintendo published this.
That's what I was like, oh, Mischief Makers, it's by Enix. I'm like, wait a minute, I remember something funky about this. And sure enough, I was right. It's an extremely good platformer. Very like cool N64 look that definitely like it's like that weird stylized.
Doesn't it have like the Yoshi story vibe to it?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I was going to say, I don't think I've ever actually played all the way through Mischief Makers. I've played it before, but I don't think I've ever actually finished it.
I think about Shake Shake way too often throughout my life.
Just constantly haunts your dreams.
Yeah. Shake Shake. All right.
Fun fact. If you look at the Wikipedia page for Mischief Makers, it came out in 1997. If you look at the list of N64 games, then the European version came out in 98.
Oh, okay. That's weird.
So I don't know which one of those is true, but it's also an N64 game, so maybe it's like just depends on which story.
No one cares.
Yep. Okay, I have another one.
Did this come out in the year 2000?
No.
Had
to break our streak eventually.
Damn. I just keep on wanting to do the year ones because it's such a good way to break it down, but it also feels cheap.
No, there's the you don't like. I mean,
did this come out in 1998?
No.
So two. Did this come out in 1999?
No.
1997.
That's correct.
Okay.
I'll add 1997 in all regions.
Okay.
At least according to the Wikipedia page. I didn't look at the list of N64 games.
Is this a racing game?
No.
Is this a shooter?
No.
Is this a Star Wars game?
No. I should probably do one of those at some point.
God, there weren't a lot of games that came out in 1997.
Just gotta look for dumb shit that John would have played.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm looking at. So I'm looking at this on my phone, so it's not is this a flight game?
Nope.
Is this Chameleon Twist?
Yeah, it is.
This is a pretty good video game.
Yeah, this was another one of those like weird rental games that you just like pick up like, what is this?
Yep.
There's a second one that I to this day have never played. And this is the peak of like the stuff that I want on NSO.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I hope this
kind of
feels
stuff.
Possible because it's Sunsoft.
Yeah.
I hope they would still own the rights to it. Yeah, like it feels within the realm of possibility. Whether or not it's NSO, like maybe it'll come back in some capacity.
Just Chameleon Twist HD.
Yep.
Done, of course, in the style of Final Fantasy VII remake.
And it'll come out the same week as Lin-Manuel Miranda's Miyamoto.
Yeah, this actually, okay, we mentioned people buying up the rights to cheap video games to make bad animated movies. Chameleon Twist,
yes,
is happening.
Absolutely.
This, the one thing I hesitated on under your questions is I wasn't sure if this game is you're a chameleon, I guess.
Yeah.
You don't really look like one, but you have a really long tongue, and when you stick it out, you can like it's control kinda, it with yeah. the analog stick. And so I was like, that's kind of like a shooter. But yeah, you do that, and then you can like grab enemies, and I think you eat them. I don't remember. It's been a long time since I've played this.
Same
it's
here.
It's just stuck in my head.
It was a game that when I was looking together to put my list, I passed by it. I'm like, I don't really remember that much about it. I just know I played it.
It's deeply ingrained
yep.
for some reason.
All right, I am ready with my fourth game whenever you want to start asking questions.
Let's see, 1999?
Only in one region.
Okay. Were the other regions after 1999?
No, they were before.
Okay. Let's try to figure out a way to ask that in like a yes or no kind of way. Is it a sports game?
Yes.
Okay. There's honestly still kind of a few of those.
Yeah.
Would you? Yeah, that really didn't narrow it down as much as it should have. Would you call it an extreme sports game?
No, I would not.
Okay. In your personal life, do you consider racing an extreme sport or a regular sport? I guess I could just say, is it a racing game?
It's not a racing game.
Okay. Okay.
But for the record, always looking at like Mario sports games, I'm like, does Mario Kart really count? Like that's my take on that.
Yeah, I don't know if that is racing. I feel like racing itself is a sport.
Like racing is a sport, but I feel like in the concept of like, oh, I'm playing some sports video games, I feel like a lot of racing games don't fit into that genre.
I feel like I need to start referring to all kart racers as sports games just to sort of annoy you. Like, I think you'd get really mad, but you just generally be like, I disagree with that.
I do like the chaos of that, so I don't think you'd get your stated goal of annoying me. I think I'd find it more funny.
Just gradually convert you. If Madden is an RPG, then RPGs are sports games, and thus Mario RPG is a sports game.
Yeah.
By the transitive property of sports. Is it a football game?
Yes.
FOOTBALL.
Yeah, yeah.
American football. Okay.
Yeah. The only football I know.
Is it? I saw one.
I'm also looking at the Wikipedia page and not that list that you're looking
at. I better double check.
There could be differences.
No, okay. It's not that one. Okay. Is it Madden 99?
Yes, it is.
All right.
This would have been the first Madden that I got very, very deep into because it is the first one that had franchise mode. When we're talking about Madden as RPGs, that is where it starts to happen. I believe in this one, you can only do 15 years of a franchise mode, and I did 15 years for multiple teams.
So you can take your team up to 2014?
Yeah. Yeah, now, I mean, sweet. I usually do not take my teams that far. I'll probably get like 5 or 6 seasons and then be like, yeah, I need to move on. But I think now in franchise mode, you can get like very far into the future. I know you can definitely get to like, I remember even in Madden 99, there would be like 3 actual real players still in the game by the time you got to the end of it.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I mean, this was the first one of the franchise mode. It was like discovering a new element when I got deep into this. Although I do remember there were some like PC baseball games that I played that kind of had some of that, like take a team, watch them grow aspects of it.
Yeah.
But I really like football. And this was how I started getting really deep into Madden. Looking at this, I didn't realize that Madden 64, which came out the year before, was technically would have been Madden 98. And I think it was like a version of Madden 98, but it was called Madden 64. Because Acclaim in 1997 had the exclusive rights for the NFL, not the NFL Players Association. So Madden 64 had the players named right, they didn't have the names of the teams. So instead of like, they could do like the colors of the teams, but they couldn't call them by their names. So like, I think it's like the Carolina Panthers were referred to in the commentary by John Madden as like Charlotte, because they play. That's what, like, I think they could say the stadium, where the stadium was located. Like, we're playing at this stadium in Charlotte, North Carolina. We're playing at the stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. They could not say New England. I did not realize how bizarre some of that is. Like, it is like some of those weird licensing stuff. Cause I mean, you have like some of those early Griffey games on Super Nintendo are, there's Ken Griffey's a real player. Every other player in the game is fake. They have all of the team licenses. Cause those licenses are usually separate.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's Madden facts.
Yeah. Even if it's not a full RPG, it's certainly a tactics game of some sort.
Yeah.
That's, they should rename it and just call it Football Tactics.
Yes. That's, it is the kind of thing that, like, I, you know, my game design brain is basically just like, you know how, like, Inazuma 11, that, like, kind of, I feel like that fumbled the concept of, like, the sports, like, the anime sports RPG. I mean, Dodgeball Academia, I think, does a very good job of that. But, like, making that kind of, like, American football, but, like, more as an RPG in the style of Inazuma 11 has always been, like, a game concept. I'm like, I could do something with this.
Yeah,
but I don't got time for that shit. All right, what's your next game?
I can't tell you. You have to guess.
Did it come out before the year 2000?
No.
Did it come out in the year 2000?
In almost every region, yes.
Is it a shooter?
No.
So I'm at three. Is this a 3D platformer?
No.
Is this a Star Wars game?
No.
Is this a game published by Ubisoft?
I don't think so.
Is this game Mega Man 64?
No.
Damn it.
But I need to double check the publisher on this. This is a first party game.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. It's a surprise first party game. So I'm going to leave it in under the same thing as Mischief Makers. But yeah, it's technically a first party game.
Well, that should narrow down.
That should give you, yeah.
It's not Ogre Battle, which is one of those. That was the other technicality that I was thinking of.
Yeah, it is not Ogre Battle.
Jesus, I'm like looking through this list. Unless I'm like looking at the, well, you know what? I am.
I have double checked the Wikipedia list, and the publisher is accurate on the Wikipedia list.
Okay.
So,
Ridge Racer 64.
No.
Jesus Christ. Excitebike?
Nope.
So, oh, StarCraft 64.
Yeah. I did not realize this was a Nintendo published game.
That is, it is one that I definitely, that's a fact that I knew, but it's like Mischief Makers and Ogre Battle that I kind of forget about it.
You asked the publisher question, I'm like, no, it's Blizzard. And then I looked and was like, oh, it's not Blizzard.
That just, the reason why I missed that one is because when I was scanning through the list, I kept on, like, I was at the front and then I went all the way to the, or I was at like the end of the year and then went all the way to the start of the year. It was like, huh, what possibly could he mean?
Yeah, it was, this was one where, like, my friends and I played a lot of StarCraft on PC. I to this day have never owned an actual, legal copy of StarCraft on PC. Because I had both StarCraft and Brood Wars as just burned copies from a friend who lived down the street. So this was the only way that I could play StarCraft officially, or that I owned StarCraft officially. And it was interesting because, A, it's honestly, as far as like console RTS ports go, especially on N64, it was like pretty darn good.
Yeah.
It had the base game and the Brood Wars expansion as long as you had the expansion pack. You couldn't play the expansion without the expansion pack. It just made sense.
Yeah, it was logical.
But it also, it had split screen, which playing a real-time strategy game in split screen is a very different experience from, like, because you know where the other person is. You can see what they're doing. Like, it's a very different experience than playing it on PC. So I have a lot of affinity for this game, and I've booted it up recently, and they really did a great job. Like, it feels, I don't know if it's actually running at like a higher resolution mode on the N64, but like all of the sprite work is super clear. And it's a really good port.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that was my fourth game.
Yes. Yeah. I've one more.
Okay. What is it?
I'm not going to tell you.
Let's see. Is it a sports game?
Yes.
Okay.
I told you.
Yeah. Is it an, I'm just going to redo these questions. Is it an extreme sports game?
No.
Okay. Was it released before 1999?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then it can't be Bassmasters 2000. is it a American football game?
No, it is not.
Okay.
Even though Brett Favre was on the cover of NFL Quarterback Club 1998, I'm pretty sure I did not like that game as
much. is it a baseball game?
No, it is not.
That's all the sports, Neil.
I mean, Griffey is a tremendous game, but it's Nintendo published.
That's true. Is it a basketball game?
No.
Jesus.
Although Fox Sports College Basketball 99 is a game that I did enjoy.
Is it a hockey game?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Is it NHL 99?
No, it is not. Two questions left.
Okay. Is there a looking for earlier? Because I'm not totally confident that they're just labeled as the year the whole way through. Is it NHL Breakaway 98?
No, it is not. Last question.
Oh, no. Oh, no. okay, so it could be that. It could be, oh, is it Wayne Gretzky's 3D Hockey 98?
No. No, it's not.
Oh. Boy, there are actually a surprising number of hockey games so that is, released that is, before 1999 on N64.
That is all 10 questions. It is Wayne Gretzky's 3D Hockey.
Oh, is that different from Wayne Gretzky's 3D Hockey 98?
Yes. Yeah, there were two.
Okay.
This one came out in November 1996 in North America. It was based off an arcade game. This was the one that I played more of. I did not realize it had this distinction until I looked into it on Wikipedia. It was the first four-player game to be released on the Nintendo 64. Made by Atari, published by Midway on the N64. There's also a note here that I did not verify, but it's headcanon now, even if it's not true, that when it was announced, the N64 version, Midway Games was publishing it, known for Mortal Kombat at the time, and they said that it was going to include fatalities after fights.
Oh,
that got taken out, which is pretty good, especially like there's been like a lot of like a lot of discussion in the hockey world recently about like trying to just legislate fights from ever happening in the game.
I mean, it is kind of nuts, like,
yeah,
that it's like part of that sport.
Yeah. And I do remember this was hockey was a genre that I never played a lot of. I do remember there's a Mario Lemieux hockey on Sega Genesis that like just straight up go, it's like a fucking Street Fighter game when you get to the fights. But this one, I do remember there's like an ambulance that will come out on the ice after a fight, and like there were it's been a while since I played this one, but I just remember this was a game where fights happened a lot and they were buck wild. And there were two different modes. There was like a simulation mode that would be more true to life, and an arcade mode where it was a lot more like NFL Blitzy. It's a pretty fun early game. Probably, I would imagine going back to it, it only holds up for nostalgia because it is a Nintendo 64 sports game from 1996.
Yeah, I did see that apparently the sequel, Wayne Gretzky's 3D Hockey 98,
yep,
was developed by Iguana Entertainment.
Yeah, yeah.
Proto Retro Studios.
Yep, yep.
Yeah.
All right. Do you have a final game?
I have a final game. I don't know if it's the deepest, darkest, most obscurest of all or not.
Is it Star Wars Shadows of the Empire?
No, it is not. There were no Star Wars games on my list.
Okay. All right. Well, I should have just asked if it was a Star Wars game or not, but thanks for giving that away. Did it come out before 2000?
Boy, I should probably bring up the Wikipedia. I don't. I believe so, but let me double check. You said before 2000.
Yep.
No, it did not release before 2000, I think.
Was it published by Acclaim?
No.
Okay. Was it published by THQ?
No. Though, like, they probably own the rights by now. but no, I don't believe it had any ties to THQ. I'm so curious now.
Is it a platformer?
No.
Is it a racing game?
No.
Is it a fighting game?
Nope. I did some research, and neither did the developer nor the publishers seems to have any ties to THQ. I had to know once you asked.
Is it Battlezone Rise of the Black Dogs?
Yeah, it is.
I was just skidding the list being like, what's a John Ash John game? And I found it.
Oh, this game. So this was a port of a PC game. And the cool thing about this particular brief stint of Battlezone reboot, because Battlezone was, of course, an Atari arcade game. But this run of them were first person real time strategy games. And so you'd be driving around in your tank, but then you could issue orders to like construct buildings and like build units and then like add those units to your group and like send them, like give them commands and send them out. And on PC, it was like one of those games that was very much a PC game. It used like the whole keyboard because the controls were extremely complicated. And for some reason, somebody was like, we can get that on an N64 controller. And it was just ridiculously complicated to control. But one cool thing they did was because of that, like they had the whole original PC version, but then you could also play, they had a mode that was called pilot mode, where they went through and they scripted all of the RTS elements. So your base would just control itself in like the same way every time. Like it was a completely scripted build of each base and it would produce units and send them to do things. And all you had to do was play as one unit in your base. So you could either play it as the person in charge, or you could literally just play as one soldier in an RTS that you weren't controlling, which I thought was just really cool. It also had a multiplayer mode that was super janky, but that me and my little brother and my friends played a whole lot of. And it was cool when you got blown up. Rather than just dying, your pilot would eject from your tank, and then like you were just wandering the surface of like the moon or wherever you were. And if you could get to another available tank, whether yours or an enemy's, you could take that. Otherwise, you were just on foot and very likely to just be run over. but it's a super awesome game. And if anyone's curious, there is a version of it on Steam called Battlezone 98 Redux. That is very good and has like slightly modernized graphics, and we're just gonna real quick go check to make sure that wasn't made by THQ because now I question it. Oh god, it's Rebellion. Is Rebellion owned by THQ?
It might be.
Are they not a subsidiary? Are they independent?
Good for them.
Good job, guys. Okay, yeah. Okay, so we're still not quite into THQ land yet, but it feels like we're getting closer. Because this feels like when you asked that, I was like, I mean, it might be. But it feels like a THQ kind of game.
Just give it time. They'll own it. Give it to Embracer.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone gets embraced eventually.
That's okay. Yeah, that's so we each did five games. I will say the other one on my list, because I was just trying to be like, what was things that I remembered I played that wouldn't be that obvious? And I don't know if I'm going to say I'm going to stand up for Quest 64, but there was almost literally nothing else for people who liked RPGs in the early days of the N64.
Yeah,
we played what we could get. Is Quest 64 a dog shit game? Absolutely. Is it a game that I played a lot of and have some fond memories of? Yep.
It's also crazy. Like we talked about this in an earlier episode, but it's not on NSO yet.
Yeah.
Which we predicted it would definitely show up.
I hope it does. Because it is, once again, it is in that line. Although I think Winback is a better game. But like Quest 64 is absolutely a game that should show up on NSO.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know. It's not good, but it is kind of iconic of the N64. Yeah. And like I think everybody knows it.
Yeah, and I think it is interesting.
Yeah.
And another one that I didn't have on my list, and I actually guessed it for yours, is Hybrid Heaven. It's a wild game.
Yeah.
That was, I think, might have been one, like, I think I got that, like, it was something that, like, when I was thinking between a PlayStation 2 and a GameCube, didn't know what I wanted to save up money for, because I think it would have been, like, 2001. I think I got, like, Hybrid Heaven used and played it. In that wait, when then I finally decided that I was like, I'll wait for the GameCube.
Yeah.
But it's a wild game. Shout out to Mega Man 64 and those shitty Castlevania games.
The one that my backup one, in case we had any, I wasn't sure if you were going to steal Buck Bumble from me. So my backup one, in case you got that, was going to be Forsaken 64, which that game's awesome.
Like, what is it? It's fucking War Gods.
Was that the War Gods was like the 2D fighter, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Body Harvest, Space Station, Silicon Valley. Just other games that I played much later. Did not fit the criteria that I was going for. But were all games that I kind of coveted during the era, just didn't get.
Yeah. Yeah, there's so much of that. Once again, like we mentioned at the beginning, like I feel like N64, maybe more than most, even other Nintendo consoles, is one where we only really think about the Nintendo games, because it was a time where a lot of the big third parties were moving to PlayStation. But that meant there was a lot of these like kind of lower budget, weirder games for third parties on N64. And I feel like they just never get talked about. And there's so much, I'm not going to say great games, but there's some really cool games within that realm.
I think that's an episode. If you want to write in with other things for us to do, we're here. Send it into connectivity at NintendoWorldReport.com. You can hit us up on Twitter at ConnectivityNWR. People keeping track of our 3D Zelda Game Club that is hurtling towards its conclusion with The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. That is looking like it'll come out, I guess, the first week of May. We're probably going to be recording it on April 30th. So if you want to get any thoughts on The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild in for our game club, send an email to connectivity at NintendoWorldReport.com, or join us in the discussion on the Discord. And if you want to like formally send in some stuff there too, we can pull from there as well. But yeah, we're getting close to it. What's your progress update in Breath of the Wild so far?
So I got all the way through Divine Beast Von Naboris, and then got to Lightning Blight Ganon, and realized that I cannot do Lightning Blight Ganon with four hearts, because he can one-shot you.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, he is by far the hardest of the Blights.
I agree.
Which is why I picked to do him first.
Yeah. I will say, I have been, this is a game that's very easy to get distracted in. I've put a handful of hours into it. It took me a while to get to Kakariko, because I kept on getting distracted. After Kakariko, I somehow wandered up north and like triggered a lot of Zora cutscenes. But my intention is to go to Hateno and like get, go through that stuff before then making my way to the Gerudo area, which I mean, hearing your troubles, I'm probably going to actually put some stuff into hearts. I've been putting it all into stamina, so I only have three hearts.
Yeah, but once you get to Hateno, that's where the statue is, that you can swap them if you want to.
Oh, yeah.
So I've just been doing shrine quests. I did detour really early on when I saw the DLC quest pop up. And I saw the one for the Xenoblade 2 armor pop up, and I was like, oh, that was a thing. So I stopped everything really early on and went and hunted down all the Xenoblade 2 armor pieces, because I'm like, obviously I need to play through this game as Rex. As now Aonuma intended.
I forget, is that one, because I looked at that quest and it's something about like, oh, you need to find a shooting star. Is it like a pain to do, or is it pretty easy?
No, it's pretty much like, it gives you a hint. It's not that bad if you know the map pretty well. It'll give you, like, okay. I know the first one is like, go to the, like, stand in the middle of the longest bridge and look at the southern sky.
Ah, okay.
And you have to, like, go to the Bridge of Eldin, or not the Bridge of Eldin. Yeah, the one that looks like the Bridge of Eldin.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're not too, if, especially if you have the map unlocked. They're pretty much all references to, like, very specific place names.
I looked at the DLC stuff, and I think once I start opening up more of the map, I might just go through and get all of those. I got most of them initially. But I talked about it before that my original save file died in the summer of 2017 when my Switch broke. So I have not played further than like 20 hours since then into the game. Hurtling away towards playing more of this game. It is very good. I do, I guess, prelude to the episode. I kind of love how much it just kicks your ass in the beginning. And
yeah, it everything one shots you.
It makes me not like, it's something that I'm just going to preempt things that I have heard Matt said. But it's like, I think I really like how it does that, where you are kind of powerless in the beginning. And I do agree that, like, as you get near the end of the game, it's like a lot of the enemies don't stand a chance because you're geared up. Have powers, you have abilities, but it's like a Metroid aspect of it. Like I might be in the minority of this. I really love that moment in a Metroid game where you just, areas that you had to painstakingly go through and like smartly take out enemies, you just walk in with a screw attack and just fuck everybody's shit up. I love that it's feeling satisfying. At the end of a Metroid game. I love that, like, you know, march to the final boss where you're like, I can destroy the world as I go through areas that I went before. And it is something that, like, I do forget, like, how much this game humbles you early on. You get into a fight you're not prepared for, you're going to have a bad time. But then as you work your way through it, you know, get a wider variety of weapons, get better armor, get more hearts, get more stamina, all those things, get the divine beast powers. Like, there's so much flexibility in what you can do. And I think there's also the ability, like doing what I'm doing right now, where focus on stamina, don't get hearts, and it stays pretty hard because I only have 3 hearts. A light breeze will destroy me.
Yeah. I had a lot of moments on the Great Plateau where I forgot I didn't have the glider yet and would leap off of something and then die.
Yeah. I did that a lot early on and then was like, don't do it.
Yeah, I pulled up my the hero's path or whatever you can see on the map where it like shows you where you've been. And the first several like seconds of it are just me dying repeatedly on the Great Plateau. And I'm thinking like, none of that was from enemies. It was all just me being like, I can take that fall. Nope.
But I do like, I've been, it is like playing that game, being better at the shield parry, like immediately, is a little bit of a game changer, because that took me a little while to kind of get the rhythm and the timing and understand how it worked. I will say, starting to play it after seeing that last Tears of the Kingdom trailer, although I guess by the time you all hear this, there will be the final likely story driven trailer, that is airing on April 13th. But I'm so excited to play that game with the new abilities, because I think it's going to, like, it makes me solidified with my take of, I'm not really bothered that the map is largely the same, potentially, or at least has a lot of things that we've seen before, because you put new powers on that is going to feel completely different. And also, it's a big enough map that, I guess there are a handful of people that know every inch of Hyrule from Breath of the Wild, it's still going to be fresh, because I'm going to this game and it feels fresh, even though I played it before. I've played parts of this game multiple times, and this still feels completely fresh, because there is a little bit of like, you know, you have different weapons, you have different abilities, you approach things differently, you can try things differently. It's so flexible. I love it.
Yeah, I'll also say that I'm playing with the pro HUD this time around, and even if you think you know the map, boy, do you not know the map once you don't have one.
Yeah.
Like, because I'm trying to, I've made a rule that I'm only allowed to pull up the actual overworld map If I need to, if I have a side quest that doesn't say where it is in the quest log, then I can pull up the map to see where I need to go for that. But I'm not using the map to navigate at all.
That's fine.
And yeah, it's a different it's a different game. But it's fun. And I feel like I keep just running into areas where I'm like, I honestly am not sure if I've been here before. just because I'm, you know, going weird ways to get to stuff. Just and like honestly, a lot of times, like when I had to get to Akala, I was like, okay, I don't remember exactly where that is, but like I climbed up to the top of a Sheikah Tower and just looked around in the general direction until I'm like, I know like Akala Citadel is in Akala. So I just scanned the map until I saw that on the horizon and was like, okay, it's there. And then like marked the Citadel because that was the tallest point and then just went that way. and it's a very, it's such a cool way to experience the game. I think my plan is that once we get within a couple days of recording, wherever I am in the game, I'm just going to turn and go to the castle and see if I could finish it.
That's a good idea.
Because that's the cool thing about this game is like, I don't have to have done all the divine beasts by the time we get to the point where we want to record. Yep. If I want to roll credits, I can technically just go see if I can finish the game from wherever I'm at.
Man, like, and I have a feeling this is going to be something that ages a little bit, because if we do get a little idea of what the story is, it might give us some ideas as to how this will play out. It's just the design of Breath of the Wild in that you can go be Ganon at any point if you really want to, and how there is even kind of that, you know, go whatever way you want for whatever divine beast. There's a lot of different paths that you can attack this. It's really neat.
Yeah, it's, you know, hot take, good game.
Yeah, maybe one of the best of the past couple of years.
And or that's just the best. One of the best.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that'll do it for this episode. Talk to y'all next week.
Bye!